This is Broski Musan on KMJ. I'm John Broski.
And I'm Christina Musan.
Hey, we're going to talk to the Madera County District Attorney this morning, Christina, about an arsonist, convicted arsonist, who's being released from prison because it's a nonviolent crime.
Set 21 fires in the Yosemite Lakes Parks area, convicted of the crime, sentenced to 30 years. Something, I will have to ask her what it was, changed that to be then being released in 2023. Last week on Thursday, she finds out, nope, he's being released like this week sometime.
Yeah, 30 years, ends up being about 9 years, and then they couldn't wait and released him even a couple of years earlier than that.
He's a part of these like 76,000 nonviolent offenders. It's a nonviolent offender release. But explain to me how you're a nonviolent offender when you set fires up in the forest, 21 of them. You know, we have these two fires burning to the north of us that have now like merged together. And it's like 115 some odd thousand acres right now. Is the irony lost on anybody else? It's just, what is going on here in this state?
You know, if you set that many fires in populated areas, which this a lot of these in Yosemite Lakes Park, and I think there were more, these convicted on 21.
Right.
But there were more. And so he might have been involved in more, but maybe they just stop after 21 and say, we haven't got time to investigate all of them, you know. He's just lucky you didn't cause any violence, right? I mean, I think you can consider fire pretty violent in and of itself, but I guess he didn't kill anybody, but he certainly could have.
Well, so not just him, but his wife was also convicted. I guess she has served her sentence. But and I don't know what that relationship is here to, you know, what she was necessarily convicted of herself. But this is like a duo that was going around Yosemite Lakes Park setting fires. And then I think he was a volunteer firefighter as well, responding to the fires. That's creepy. It's like we're going to get into like the dating game rapist guy.
Right.
And just the narcissism of these people. And that clearly to me says you got some really big issues going on.
Yeah. Well, the dating game killer, you know, coincidentally then dies over the weekend. Like everybody on death row, you don't get executed.
No.
You just eventually you die. So I guess death row is an appropriate name because people do die there, Christina. But
could we come to a conclusion, John, that a person convicted of crimes three separate times, and sentenced to death, deserves to die on death row, of not natural causes?
Yeah. This guy, he's called the dating game killer because he actually was one of the guests on the dating game. Apparently never killed anybody that had anything to do with the dating game show.
No.
But because he, and when he appeared on the dating game, they didn't have the weight of to kind of investigate backgrounds back. This was in the 70s. You can't just go on Facebook and check out his Facebook page.
Can't just Google somebody's name.
Google the name and see if he comes up with any convictions. He'd already been convicted of raping an 8-year-old girl.
And killing her.
And I think he just raped her.
I think I have in my notes that he killed her, too.
Well,
I don't know.
The reason I say this is because she testified later.
Never mind.
Hey, bad enough.
It was bad enough. I know he killed a 12-year-old and he was sentenced on one of those.
Anyway, so he raped an 8-year-old girl and spent 34 months in prison. Okay, now that, we ought to think about that, letting people that rape 8-year-olds out of prison, but we do.
And that was in the 70s.
Yeah, but we still do. We still let people
out. We still do that.
Right?
Yeah.
And they think he might have already killed 5 women when he appeared on the dating game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, we're going to talk about that because that case was overturned time and time again by California courts, which is another problem with our criminal justice system. It's getting these California judges who, I don't know, find some reason. Just imagine if this guy actually had gotten out. They found like 100 pictures somewhere.
It's disgusting. Victims, right? And jewelry as like prizes and trophies. Yeah. It's just disgusting.
Well, they always say these guys take some kind of trophy as remembrance when they kill somebody.
Well, and the reason that they say too, and this is the reason I brought him up in this discussion, right, is because he went on the dating game the thing is, the arrogance and the narcissism of somebody to take, you know, to take trophies and the ego behind all of it. And when I think about this person that goes and sets 21 wildfires up in Yosemite Lakes Park, is convicted of the crime, sentenced to 30 years in prison, but not only set the fires, but then responded to them too. I mean, that takes ego, narcissism, arrogance. That's all these same kind of qualifications that a serial killer has to me. And yet he's going to walk free this week. And so the best that can be done here is for the victims of this person to sign a petition that he not be released back into Madera County. Well, duh. I mean, but that's like the best that they can do in this situation. What's done is done. He's going to be released. So now they're just trying to keep him out of Madera County. I'd like to keep him out of California. Could we agree to that?
I know, but it's almost unfair that he's going to be going somewhere else, you know, I mean, or even out of California.
You think Butte right? County wants him?
No county wants him.
No.
So Sally Moreno is here. We're going to talk to her about this situation with the fires. We've also got a column by Dan Walters where he is now writing about crime and the governor and how crime be a factor in this recall. And you and I think that should be the number one thing in this recall.
You were the first person to say it. And when you said it, it was so spot on. And how long have we been saying it now?
Months. Yeah. So I don't see any of these candidates jumping on the bandwagon yet. We're not sure exactly what Larry Elder is going to do, but we're going to find out tomorrow because Larry Elder is going to be on our show, right?
Fingers crossed.
Okay. So we'll ask him if our crime's going to fit into his marketing campaign here. Because it's like, there's a lot of issues that we have another article today about a guy who writes his column, I Remember When, kind of column.
Yes.
When California was this. And we'll go down the list. And when you read this, you just go, yes. I remember when California had the best gold. I remember California had the best roads. I remember when we had a water system that actually worked. I remember blah, 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 blah. We're going to go down that list. But we're going to try to see if we can figure out exactly where we are with this recall. And Larry Elder, who seems to be the guy, don't you think? He's the guy that people have kind of attached themselves to.
Yeah, I know the California GOP is looking at doing an endorsement of somebody. So that'll be interesting to see if they endorse him or not. And but people seem to be interested in what he has to say.
Yeah.
And learning more about him.
Well, think about it. You know, John Cox he ran for governor last year and lost 60 to 40. So he's been in the news as a candidate for a couple of years. You know, and we have the other ones, Caitlyn Jenner, you know, pretty famous person. You know, we have these other candidates and nobody has really caught on.
Right.
Larry Elder jumps in and immediately catches on. So it's like, I always said, you know, both sides lack enthusiasm, right? Now the Republican side has some enthusiasm, and I don't think the left has a lot of enthusiasm because even they seem to realize this state is not being run real well.
But right? John, everybody's going to be mailed a ballot.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it? Which, of course, there can't be any problems with that.
I mean, I think one of the questions that we should jot down for Larry Elder is what are you going to do about ballot harvesting?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what's your plan?
Yeah.
You know, you got to have a plan.
So, Sally Moreno is here. District Attorney of Madera County talking about this arsonist being convicted arsonist, I should say. That's a fact. Convicted arsonist. He's always maintained his innocence.
But he was convicted.
Know, yeah. But everybody in Shawshank does that, right?
We're joined in studio right now by Sally Moreno. She's the District Attorney of the County of Madera. And thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Christina. John.
Yeah. You know, you can't ignore this story. I know you held a press conference last week and... were you shocked and surprised by when you received the call that Kenneth Jackson was going to be released?
You know, I was. And really what it was this 11th hour switch. We were expecting him to be released sometime next year, and we were getting ready to prepare the community for that. All of a sudden, we get an email on Thursday afternoon that they're going to release him Tuesday. So, you know, basically we have, you know, one business day to respond to get our 1707 victim requests in and jump through all those hoops. And no discussion, no comment about why the change in the date. you know, we have no understanding of what's going on with credits. It's very opaque. CDCR is just, you know, basically doing whatever they want with credits and not telling anybody. So it's shocking. But we're not the only one this has happened to. This is happening up and down the state. It's just that in our community, this is a very prominent criminal. And, you know, if they think they're going to slide this by us, it's not going to happen. The community is outraged, and there's still a ton of, you know, dismay about this. People still are traumatized when they think back to those weeks in 2013 when these fires were going on.
Tell us about that time. Just remind us, what happened back there?
So it was May and June of 2013, and the fires started happening, and CAL FIRE immediately realized they had an arsonist, a serial arsonist on their hand, and they went into high gear and did an investigation. They got some amazingly good evidence. Still, it took them about 30 fires until they got him arrested. I remember the conversations about, can we wait? Can we put a tracker? Can we catch him actually setting a fire? And the danger was just too great. It was a drought time, and it was wildland fires, and you know, they were going like crazy. Thank God, you know, CAL FIRE did such a great job getting him stopped that we didn't lose any lives. I think only one home was burned by this series of fires, but the whole community, and it's a very tight-knit community, you know, they're looking at their neighbors, and it's a community of, you know, large-ish parcels, you know, 2 to 7 acres. So people have horses. They're trying to decide, do I move my horses? They're afraid to go. They're afraid to stay. You know, they would talk about every time they heard a helicopter or an aircraft, they'd go out onto their deck and look and see where the fire was. Up there yesterday, or Friday rather, talking to people about watching it burn right up, helping their neighbors try to get out, you know, deciding what to... It's just terrifying to all of them, and to relive it. I still get goosebumps when I think about what those people went through those 6 weeks and how hard we worked to convict him of setting those fires.
You know, we... then they call this nonviolent, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess, luckily, it didn't hurt anybody, I guess.
Right. You
so
know, and again,
is that why it's nonviolent?
Yes, just, that's a testament, you know, to CAL FIRE. The other thing that happens is, you know, we charged him with 30 fires and the jury convicted him of 20 of those. They drew a chronological line and convicted him of all the fires after a certain date. Well, the home was burned earlier. Actually, burning a home is a violent crime. So had we convicted him of that count, we would have had a violent crime. But yeah, the term violent crime is misleading. And I think, you know, as a lawyer, it's one of those things. There's a very specific definition of violent crime in our penal code, and it's a very small number of crimes. And it excludes things like rape of an unconscious person, human trafficking, domestic violence. There it is right in the title, violence. Nope, not a violent crime. So that's what happens when we start passing this Prop 57, which was the early parole for nonviolent offenders. They don't realize, the citizenry doesn't realize that nonviolent has a very specific definition in the law, and that's the law that's going to be applied. It's not the common understanding of nonviolent.
So he was convicted in 2014,
yes.
Right? Was 57, Prop 57 after that?
I don't know, but it was retroactive whenever it passed.
Didn't matter either way. So he was sentenced to 30. So what does it mean these days when you're sentenced to 30?
Well, you know, if you're sentenced to 30 years on nonviolent crimes, you're going to do half time. And that's another thing. It's just shocking to people. I don't know if you know, but I've been doing a series of just 1 minute videos talking about things that DAs and prosecutors know that the common people don't understand. And I've got this on my list. When you're convicted of nonviolent crimes, you can expect to do half of the time. So 30 years would have been 15. It was reduced by the Court of Appeal to 20. Still, it should have been 10. Not 8, and still we should have had notice so that we could prepare the community for this. So those are the things that happen. If you've got someone who's convicted of violent crimes, by the way, you can expect them to serve 80 or 85%. But it's not, you know, it's not, 30 years doesn't mean 30 years, and it hasn't for a very long time, and that's what the public doesn't understand.
Well, we see it all the time. We see people get out early. You're right, we don't really understand exactly what's going on, so... 30 doesn't mean 30.
Nope, it doesn't. It certainly doesn't. And I'll tell you now, you know, what's happened, and this is the reason that myself and 43 other district attorneys are suing CDCR. They've passed this legislation under some emergency that they didn't really articulate what the emergency was. They've just changed all the credits recommendations. And that's what's resulting in these, you know, you get 3 days notice that they're releasing some, you know, crazy prominent offender back into your community, and we're scrambling to get it changed and to get it fixed.
Do you think you can get it changed and fixed in that respect? Because what you're trying to do is keep them out of Madera County.
Yeah, and it's been interesting. I've gotten some blowback about, you know, why would he want to go somewhere else? And the answer to that is these people in Yosemite Lakes Park, and I was up there Friday talking to them, they're still very, very traumatized. They are direct victims of this person. They shouldn't have to run into him in the supermarket. That's why we have it set up so that we can move somebody from the county where the crime was offended. So these victims don't have to be faced with him all the time. Now, the danger, obviously, is that people presume that a serial arsonist is going to continue to set fires. I'm not going to opine on whether that's right or that's wrong. But we need to move this person to an area where we don't have the wildland and the drought situation like we have here.
So what is it when they're paroled to a particular county? What does that mean for them?
It means they have to stay in that county.
They can't leave that county.
That's correct, without the permission of their parole officer. Now, you know, it's not like there's an electronic fence or something. They can leave. But if they leave, they're in violation of their parole. If they're caught outside the county, they can be returned to custody. Oftentimes, that's 180 days that they'll do in custody based on that violation. So we can watch that and we can do that kind of stuff. The other thing, you know, this guy is not a very sophisticated fire setter. It's not like he was, you know, stringing wires like you see on TV and connecting blocks of C4 and detonating it with any electronic device. It was a drought. There's tall grass along the road. It's very easy for him to set fires. And if he were returned to that community or this community of Fresno in the eastern part or any of these rural counties where we've got this grassland, it'd be very easy for him to set fires. To put him in an urban area, I think, would curtail his ability to do that and also save our victims, like I said, from having to run into him in the supermarket.
We're talking with Sally Moreno. She's the Madera County District Attorney, and we're talking about the release of Kenneth Jackson. He's the guy that was convicted of setting 21 fires in Yosemite Lakes Park near Coarse Gold in 2014. And Sally, I know that his wife was also convicted of some of this as well. She has since been released. Is she back in the Madera County community as well?
She's not in Madera County, no.
She's not. So maybe he wants to be with his wife?
You know, I don't know. And it's an interesting, situation. You know, there's generally a rule that felons can't associate. And yet there's also a rule, you know, that we try not to interfere with marital relationships. So I'm going to let parole figure that out. Like I said, we're just trying to get him moved somewhere out of Madera County, away from these direct victims and into an area where he's not going to have the opportunity to set the fires he did in our county.
And you mentioned, now, first of all, his sentence was reduced from 30 to 20. What was that?
So I presented the evidence, and the jury convicted him of about 20 counts. But the Court of Appeal, when they looked at it, they didn't like the evidence. So they said there wasn't sufficient evidence. So, you know, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. We say that I was too good a prosecutor, and the jury was too good a jury. The Court of Appeal actually overturned several of the counts, saying there wasn't sufficient evidence. Again, I disagree, but they win.
So if you are convicted of 15 counts of arson instead of 21, you get fewer years?
That's right.
Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
That seems
there's
like
so
one
many years
ought to be
for
enough,
each count.
Right?
Yeah, there's so much for each count. It's actually ridiculously complicated as well. So you'll serve a base sentence, and then for every additional crime, you'll do a third of the middle term. So for arson, it's a year and a third for each additional count because it's the middle term is 4 years.
So he had 30, which would have been 15. It got reduced to 20, which should have been 10. But now it's 8 because he got some kind of good credits for being a nice guy in jail.
Yeah, it's 8, and it's 8 with, you know, 2 business days notice that he's being released.
And so you get a notice on Thursday. He's released when?
Tuesday is
tomorrow.
What they're saying.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow?
And I will tell you, you know, I've reached out to local politicians. I tried to get a hold of the governor. I tried to contact Andres Borges. I did get a very good response from Ana Caballero. She's been in communications. She's confirmed what we already knew, which is the date is set and, you know, we can't change it. But she was interested in helping us make sure that we got him to another county. So I wanted to give her credit for intervening and stepping in and taking our side on this. And and understanding, you know, the system has shifted. Nobody's thinking about the victims anymore. Everybody's thinking about the offenders, and we forget. These people who are victims of crime, this is traumatic for them. I'm watching them shaking as they're filling out their forms, mm-hmm. thinking, oh, my God, is he going to come back into our community? We're doing everything we can to help them deal with that.
Madera County District Attorney Sally Moreno. Nice to have you on, Sally. Thank you once again for coming in and joining us today.
Always great to be here.
Crime is on our minds, Christina and I. It's been on our minds for a long time.
Long time.
And we watch this recall election, and we don't see any of these candidates picking up on crime and really just going after crime. It seems like a lot of issues, you can't be a one-issue person. And I'm sure people in California vote on a lot of issues when they vote. But it seems like crime is one of those issues the people on both sides of the aisle might be able to agree on?
Absolutely. You know, when you've got victims of crime, it doesn't matter what your party is. You know, when you're talking to those people and watching what they've been through and the trauma it causes them, and it's ongoing trauma, we can agree. We've got to do something to make sure that we're protecting those people. And lately, the laws have all been kind of the other way. It's like people just forget about crimes. And I get it. You know, if we can rehabilitate criminals, that's great. But we got to make sure we're not creating new victims. And that's what we're doing. Every time we let somebody out early and we let somebody out and we're not certain they're rehabilitated, we're creating an opportunity to create more victims. And you can look at places like Los Angeles and the district attorney there, the crime rate is moving through the roof. So you can't look ahead and say, Christina, you're going to be a victim of crime, or John, you're going to be a victim of crime. But when we introduce these policies, we know there will be more victims, not just of regular crime, not just theft crimes, but violent crimes and even murders. The murder rate's going to go up. Someone's going to get murdered who wouldn't have been if we hadn't have done these things. I don't know how else to get people involved and interested. And like I said, liberal, Democrat, conservative, Republican, it doesn't matter. We should all care about people being victims of crime.
You know, we had an opportunity last year. We had this Prop 20 that was going to try to fix some of the 4757 stuff. Matter of fact, you know, we see these videos every day of these people carrying clothes out of stores, just nonchalantly carrying out whatever they want.
The latest one just walked out.
And it would have, you know, Prop 20 would have fixed that to some extent.
It would have.
Right? But the governor was against it, campaigned against it. It lost badly. And now he came out last week with his fix for the same thing that Prop 20 tried to fix.
Yeah, no, he did. And again, it's a pretty complicated law. It has to do with gangs of people committing these kind of theft rings. Why does it have to be a gang? Why can't one person walking into Walmart stealing a flat screen TV that's worth, you know, $900 or $1,000? Why can't we just charge that person with a felony? You know, I guess at that level you could. But you know, they stay under the level $950 or $900, and now it's just a ticket. So, you know, just over and over and over, and we're turning them in and out of the jail. There's not even time for them to consider what they've done.
Well, you know, Prop 20 would have fixed that dollar amount from 960, I think, down to 450.
I think that's
like that.
Right. Yeah.
Not half.
Well, and it would have given us back your, return offenders. If you've got frequent flyers, your third,
three
or fourth,
times, yeah,
yeah.
Theft three strikes.
Yeah, becomes a becomes a felony, not like a 25 to life thing, but
right.
At least if we know that you're a habitual thief, we can up the ante.
But
I wanted to mention too. Yeah. I just was thinking about, not in the governor's race, but in the AG race. You've got Anne Marie Schubert, who is right. the Sacramento DA.
We've had her on here.
Yeah, and she's talking crime. And she's got great ideas for crime.
I know.
And
I wish somebody would jump on her bandwagon.
We talked to her the day after she declared. We had her on the air here, and we talked to her about that. Could you go get one of these governor candidates on board with you? And you know, and of course, I'm sure she would love that. But she's focused on, you know, talking to the people of California about being attorney general. So, you know, I get it. But when you think about all of this, like what the governor did last week, what he did was take something that had been in existence already and extended it for another 5 years. So he really didn't do a whole lot. And then when you talk to, also, we talked to the sheriff last week of Fresno County about it, Margaret Mims, and she was pointing out to us, even if you are guilty and convicted of these crimes, then they want the county to house you instead of the state housing you. And the counties don't have room for these people. So what ends up happening? The county looks like the bad guy because they're releasing people because there's no room.
Right. And, you know, they talked about all the money that was going to come to the counties to take care of these things, and we haven't seen it. I'm sure you're shocked. I'm glad you're sitting down as I am, because the money never materialized for us to develop what we need to be able to house these people.
490-5858. Let's take a call here. Victor, you're on KMJ.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, Victor Bruno. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Just a question, and you had mentioned that there was no injuries in that fire, in the fires up in YLP. Does it change if you contact Cal Fire to see if any of the firefighters were injured in any way? Then it would change from zero injuries to however many firefighters were injured.
All right. Well, thanks, Vic. That's a good question. The issue now is that it's all already been adjudicated. And that was one of the things that the defense did. It was very surprising that that case actually got to the jury within a year of the anniversary of the first crime. And that was because the defendants decided not to waive time. So we were working as fast as we could, and Cal Fire was working very, very hard. But you can imagine they've got, you know, at the time, I'm going to estimate maybe seven investigators. So each of those investigators was required to fill out four or five different reports, fill out a complete report about the origin of that fire and all that. We did what we could at the time. I don't have a specific recall of any firefighters being injured, and I don't think Cal Fire notified me of any firefighters that were injured. And at this late a date, it's too late to change that. We're stuck with the convictions that we got.
So will they let you know where they're going to release him? What county? You say you got a notification Thursday that this was happening. Is there that lack of communication here?
There's absolutely a lack of communication from CDCR. And I'm going to tell you, if you go ahead and jump on the internet, you'll see DAs all over are dealing with similar things. Very little or no notice. You know, I think one of them, they got notice at 5 o'clock in the evening that they were releasing a defendant the next day. And, you know, it's our obligation to notify the victims that this stuff is happening. So you're talking about crimes that occurred some time ago. In my case, it's very easy. I put out a Facebook post. There's actually a Facebook page devoted to keeping Kenneth Alan Jackson in custody. And I put that out there. And in, you know, we had dozens of people come and fill out forms. But if you've got to find a victim and notify them, nobody does that except district attorneys. You know, we want them to be aware. Really? You want to turn the corner in Walmart and see this guy who you thought was going to be in prison the rest of his life with no notice? How traumatizing is that? So, you know, that's the problem. And it's very short timelines, almost no communication, and no understanding of what they're doing. Like I said, we were watching this. He was expected, even 2 weeks ago, he was expected to be released sometime next year. And we were getting ready to gear up to let the community know that that's what was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, it changes. What changed? I don't know. Who changed it? I don't know. Why did it change? I don't know. But he's getting out Tuesday.
Well, you know, I think I saw one of these stories that you have been objecting to his parole for several years. Is
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So he was up for parole even a few years ago?
Right, because it's nonviolent, right? Because we didn't get that conviction on the house. So this whole thing is nonviolent. So he was eligible for that early nonviolent parole after his first term was completely served. And we've been fighting those every year. And every year, by the way, when I contact the people at Yosemite Lakes Park, we get 70 or 80 emails and letters, and they're powerful when you read what people went through. Like I said, I just can't help it. I still get goosebumps. I mean, I've worked with victims of crime my whole life. I've worked with next of kin of homicide victims. I've done a lot of work with child sexual assault victims and their family members. And you just can't underestimate how traumatic this series of fires was to that community.
You know, you talked about rehabilitation, right? It's the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. How good is California at rehabilitating inmates?
You know, the issue is statistics. Who knows? You know, it's all in the definitions. Because when you talk about rehabilitation statistics, we're talking about, are we saying that you're not rehabilitated if you get arrested again or if you get convicted again? Are we saying that you're not rehabilitated if you're arrested within 3 years or within 5 years? There's no common language of that, and there's no statistics. You know, I used to, at junior college, teach criminal justice. And that was always my thing is, look, if you can't test your idea for results, then it's not valuable. What we need to do, and I hate to say it because it's such a buzzword, but this evidence-based best practices, we need to evaluate what we're doing very critically, look at the statistics and look at the numbers. Sometimes things that intuitively seem like they'll work don't work. And by the way, sometimes things that don't seem like they will work do work. So we don't know because we don't have good stats on that stuff. And the stats aren't consistent across the board. So when you're talking about rehabilitation, I'm talking about rehabilitation, Christina, we may mean totally different things.
You know, this all started, this release of prisoners, because a federal judge ordered the state of California to release prisoners because we were overcrowded, right? Hasn't it kind of gone way beyond that now? I mean, we're certainly not overcrowded anymore, are we?
No, absolutely. Right. I think that that consent decree or that order, we reached that number in 2016, which is a long time ago. And we just have been sort of on this bandwagon kick to release people, release people, release people. And again, without consideration of the other side of the equation. You know, I tell my young lawyers, I run an office with about 20 lawyers. When you're in court, I know the judge wants you to settle that case. And I know the defense attorney wants you to settle that case. And sometimes even the direct victim, if you've got a domestic violence case or some other family violence, they want you to settle the case. I said, but don't forget, your client is every person in the state of California. It's John and Christina. It's everybody who's out there who's going to have to deal with this guy if he gets out of custody again. And it's hard. It's hard for them to do because the whole system puts pressure and the whole system pays attention to the defendant. And the people of the state of California have one representative, and that's the prosecutor in the courtroom. And we've got to stand tall and stand firm. Some of these cases, they just have to go. And we just have to make sure that we're sending these guys for as long as we can.
You know, it just seems like the politicians in California, it's like they're anti tough on crime. You know, Kamala Harris was criticized because she was tough on crime. It seems like all of the leaders, Newsom seems like he wants to be the least tough guy on crime. Like that's the way to get to the presidency. Is that where we are now? Being tough on crime is a negative in one particular party in this country.
Yeah, and I don't understand it because, like I said, it doesn't matter your party, Democrat or Republican. If you talk to a victim who's been traumatized by crime, you can't help but be moved, and you can't help but want to do what you can to make sure that we don't create more of these victims. It's just that we don't see the victim anymore. We don't pay attention. You know, we've got we amended the Constitution with Marcy's Law to make sure that victims have these rights. And yet we just don't seem to care when we're doing these things.
You know, we were talking about the dating game killer died on death row of natural causes. Right. This guy killed. We don't know. You don't even know how many people he killed.
It's the only way you can die on death row. Right.
And,
now.
You know, Christina, you know, I kind of gave up on the death penalty. Christina has still been adamantly for it because she feels like at least they stay in jail.
It's the only way they can stay in jail and not have their time cut in half for good behavior or whatever.
Well, I don't disagree about that. The other way that we do it, and again, it's something that we focus on as prosecutors, is there's this possibility of life without the possibility of parole. So if you're eligible for life without the possibility of parole, you're also eligible for the death penalty. But in this state, the vast majority of district attorneys save that death penalty for the absolute worst of the worst. But we could get somebody for life without the possibility of parole. And to date, you know, knock on wood, to date, those people stay in.
I'm going to knock on wood for you, too.
Thanks.
Hey, yeah. Thanks very much for coming in.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
I hope you succeed at least to keep the guy to your county. But unfortunately, it sends him to some other county, right?
Right. And like I said, hopefully it'll be, you know, an urban county. And hopefully, you know, like I said, I'm working on protecting our victims so that like they don't run into them in the middle of the supermarket without any notice. They don't have to deal with them. And, you know, we'll be happy to help whoever it is who catches him. You know, and honestly, I hope he's rehabilitated. I really hope he never sets another fire.
Yeah.
But I always, you know, I hope for the best and I plan for the worst. That's how I do it.
Sally, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Sally Moreno, District Attorney of Madera County.